Welcome to the NOLA Drink Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink, food, and culture in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for joining me on the NOLA Drink Show, friends. Happy to have you here, as always, and certainly the views of this host and this show do not reflect the views of much of what you might find on this radio station. Hey, getting your weekend going in the right direction. Happy hour, kicking it off here. Drive time, that's right, here in New Orleans. If you're listening on the podcast, wherever you are, I hope things are going great for you, and we're happy to have you here along for the ride. That's right. Got a really good show coming up for you today. I'll get to that in just a second. Want to flag a couple upcoming shows to your attention before we get started. Next week's show, really excited to bring you this one. We taped it already, and it's our annual French Quarter Fest preview. That's right. French Quarter Festival is back, friends, starting April 21st. The finest music festival on the planet, as far as I'm concerned, and I know many of you out there would agree with me. So happy it's back. Two-year delay due to the pandemic, like so many things, and it's finally coming back. And for a handful of years running, we would bring you an annual preview show and some other programming related to French Quarter Fest. And hey, we're doing that again. So we were over at the French Quarter Fest offices, and we chat with Kenneth, their food and beverage person, Morgan, their marketing person, and Emily, who is the executive director of the organization. Really fun show. We talk about the music, we talk about the food and drink program, all kinds of really cool stuff coming up there. Really looking forward to it. So be sure to be on the lookout for that show. That's the next one. And the one after that, which we also taped, and I'll tell you why we have so many in the can in just a second, but we also taped this show just the other day over at Arno's, the famed New Orleans French Quarter restaurant, one of the grand dames or old line restaurants, as we say. And we're talking with Sue Strachan, and Sue is a very fine author who wrote a really cool book on the historic cocktail, the Café Brûlot. Now, here in New Orleans, we've kind of made it our own. A lot of those old line restaurants serve it. Everybody's got their own little spin on it. It's a really cool hot beverage, coffee and cognac or brandy-based beverage. We'll get into all that during the show. And Sue wrote a book about it. So maybe it's pretty debatable whether the drink was actually invented in New Orleans, but we'll say it was perfected in New Orleans. And it's certainly one of those cocktails that we've made our own here. It's a really interesting story, and it's always fabulous to sit in an historic place like Arno's. So that'll be the show after that. So I said, why so many shows in the can too that we already know? They're already done. They're already ready to go. Well, almost got to put all this stuff together, but the featured interviews are already taped. Well, we got Bourbon Fest coming up, friends, and you've heard me talk about that quite a bit. You know, I'm involved with Bourbon Fest. I'm on the board of the charity that puts that on. We're going to have some exciting news related to the charity coming up here pretty quick. But that event starts next, if you're listening on the radio, next Wednesday, which is the 23rd of March, with the Bourbon Brawl at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. Going to be great. And then we got a bunch of dinners going on the Thursday night, got a bunch of seminars during the day on Friday and Saturday. And then of course the crown jewels, if you will, of the event are the two grand tastings on Friday and Saturday night at the Contemporary Arts Center in downtown New Orleans. It's a really, really fabulous event, friends. There's going to be, I think we got about 200 whiskeys that are going to be showcased at the grand tastings. All kinds of industry leaders, heavy hitters are going to be leading talks and seminars and so on and so forth during the daytime. That's at the Marriott, also in downtown New Orleans. So if you're interested in going, there's still tickets available for some of the seminars, most of them really, I think, and definitely a few spots left for the two grand tastings. So go check out NewOrleansBourbonFestival.com, and that also includes the Bourbon Brawl coming up next Wednesday. On to this show, we got a great show. We're going to be chatting with my friend Jackie Summers, also known as Jack from Brooklyn, entrepreneur, educator, activist, founder of Sorrel Liqueur. It's a super interesting journey. Jackie was the first African-American man to hold a distiller's license post-prohibition, in the United States. And his journey to start Sorrel, reboot Sorrel, and get it back on the market, which is happening as we speak, is really, really a fantastic story. And Jackie's a great guy. Been on the show a handful of times, and we're super happy to have him back. So that's our featured interview this time, talking with Jackie about Sorrel Liqueur. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. Come on back.
Liz Williams, host of Tip of the Tongue on the Nitty Grits Podcast Network. Join me and weekly guests for conversations about food and drink and the people who create food culture around the world. The show is for the curious, hungry for food knowledge. My new book, Nana's Creole Italian Table, about the Sicilian community in New Orleans, can be pre-ordered from Amazon. Learn more about Nitty Grits Podcast Network at southernfood.org.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show, friends. Happy to have you here, as always. And as you know, we are chatting with my friend Jackie Summers, a.k.a. Jack from Brooklyn, a.k.a. the man who created Sorrel Liqueur. Jackie, how are you, my friend?
It is always good to see you, sir. How have you been?
I've been fine, man, hanging in there. I think I told you before we went on the air, got a little, people are hearing this much later, but I got a little Mardi Gras cold, COVID negative. I'm repeating all that, and I'm taping this from the comfort of my home studio. But I'm doing good, man, and I'm making myself better because I made a hot toddy, and I used your fabulous Sorrel Liqueur in it, and it's working, man.
Awesome. It's all good. It's all good stuff in there for you.
It is all good stuff in there, man. And it's really, I'm so happy to have you on, man, because you've been on the show a handful of times with me before, and I always appreciate it. And lots of times, I think most of the time when you've been on before, we've sort of talked about when you were putting on seminars at Tales of the Cocktail, and we'd have some of your fellow panelists and things like that. And that was kind of the theme of the show. Other than in passing, we've never really had a chance to talk about Sorrel Liqueur and your journey, which, you know, by the way, let me ask you this question, Jackie. Anything interesting happened in the world of Sorrel in the past few months that we should know about?
Kind of everything interesting is happening with Sorrel. So one of the reasons that we haven't had a chance to talk about it is because I ceased production for a couple of years. I really focus on community building and trying to see if we could make some differences in our industry, which have just been wonderful conversations. And we've seen some changes and we see some things are starting to move in different directions. But it is because the industry's changed that Sorrel has the ability to come back and do what it is doing. And because of God bless Sarah Fawn Weaver and Uncle Nearest.
Yeah.
Uncle Nearest, for those who don't know, is the fastest growing whiskey brand in the history of the United States.
Yep.
It was started by Fawn Weaver 5 years ago. They are just knocking the socks off everywhere with their product and their story. I believe the master blender, Victoria Butler, just won Distiller Blender of the Year
blender
for the second
year
in a row.
Yeah, that's right.
They're winning literally every award you can win for whiskey. But the amazing part about the way Fawn did things is she sees, and again, I don't mean to speak in her behalf, but I believe that she has always seen her success both as a statement on her capacity and a condemnation of the industry, in that she really thinks, she truly believes other people could have similar levels of success if they had the resources.
Right.
So she took it upon herself to try and make resources available, whether it was helping people with marketing conversations, helping people figure distributions, or in my case, helping with actual funding. So she started the Uncle Nearest Fund last summer. So far, there are two recipients, Equiano Rum and myself, and it has put us back in a place where we feel we can really go the distance now. We could not be better positioned to have Sorrel become exactly what it always should have been, just a fixture in spirits and liqueurs.
Absolutely, Jackie. And you know, let's do this, man. Let's set the way back machine a little bit, because I want to come back to this journey that you mentioned and how, you know, you had to cease production and some things like that, and, you know, a couple of years ago, and then Fawn with Uncle Nearest coming, you know, with the fund that they created to help assist businesses that you just mentioned. So I want to kind of talk about that a little bit more, but let's talk about what Sorrel is and how you started making it in the first place, your background, and how it plays into, you know, part of your heritage.
So Sorrel is a modern take on a Caribbean classic that's been around literally for centuries. If you go back 500 years, they're in West Africa. They're taking hibiscus plants. They know it's a powerful curative. It's full of antioxidants, full of antimicrobials, full of antifungals. It's got more vitamin C than most citrus fruits. It's a natural aphrodisiac.
Yeah.
And they make this tea, the West Africans, and it is part of their ceremony and part of their culture and part of their celebration. And then the transatlantic trade starts, and now they're moving bodies and spices in the bottom of boats across the ocean. The flower that has the hibiscus plant literally takes root in the Caribbean, and every island does a different version of this tea mix based on what spices are traveling through their ports. For example, if you go to Jamaica, they make a version of this with ginger and cardamom and allspice because they had a large influx of Chinese workers. If you went deeper in the spice route, Trinidad and Tobago, you had a large influx of East Indian workers. So you got spices like cinnamon and nutmeg and clove with hibiscus. My grandparents came from this, from Barbados 100 years ago. So rum and everything if we're from Barbados. It is a flavor that I grew up with. I made a version of it in my kitchen for friends and family for almost 20 years. Never thought about making it into a product. 11 years ago, I had a cancer scare. My doctor found a tumor the size of a golf ball inside my spine. He said, "You're probably going to die. And if you live, there's a good chance you'll be paralyzed. You should organize your paperwork." Shred version is I live.
Yeah, you're talking to me now. So
it would be weird if I hadn't lived and we were having this conversation. That would be awkward. But it will change your perspective, the experience. Given the new outlook, I thought to myself, I've got 25 years invested in corporate America, but really, what do I want to do with my life? And Ryan, the thing I wanted to do more than anything else in the entire world is day drink. I want to be around cool people like you in the middle of the day, in the middle of the week, talking about things that matter over good food and beverage, and I wanted to monetize it. And when I couldn't figure out who was going to pay me to do this, I thought to myself, I know what I'll do. I'll launch a liquor brand. How hard can it be? Yeah, it turns out it's harder than, it's harder than I thought it initially. What I didn't know and what I couldn't have known at the time is when I got my license to make liquor in 2012, I was the only black person who held a DSP in the United States at the time.
So tell people what a DSP is, just so they know.
A DSP is a distilled spirits plant license. It is literally a license to make liquor, whether that is vodka, gin, rum, tequila, whiskey. Whatever, right. It is the federal government's ability to tax you.
Right, there it is. Bonded, baby.
Yeah.
Oh, right. So now, Jackie, like with the formula, so you mentioned these different variations, but I think your formula was pretty unique, right? I mean, it was sort of a blending of the different influences that you were just talking about. Is that right?
There's two real problems with hibiscus as a beverage. The first is it is so acidic, it's so tart that most people just bury it in sugar and then it becomes syrupy and cloying and not fun.
Right.
I was able to let it be part of an ensemble cast where it plays really well. So there's, in my version of this drink, there's cinnamon for warmth. There's ginger to mask the heat of the alcohol. There's clove for brightness. And there's nutmeg for a woody finish in the back. So instead of it being a single note, it's a procession of flavor, but it really lets you dial back the sugar content. The other really interesting part about this is no one's ever made a shelf-stable version before. Traditional versions are made across the Afro-Caribbean diaspora. They will last a month, 2 months in your refrigerator, but there hasn't been a version before which you can actually put on your shelf, open, close it, and know you can come back and it will be the same.
Right.
I was the first person to make a shelf-stable version of this, and I'll preface this by saying I am not a food scientist. This was a lot, and I mean a lot, of trial and error. 623 failures, to be exact.
Dang. Now, were you, Jackie, doing this like at home and just kept playing with it and playing with it? Or?
I left my corporate job forever. I was in my kitchen brewing batches every single day and torturing them and figuring out how they could break. And I got to tell you, the first 500 or so versions, it was like, oh, Now I understand why no one's ever done this before.
After 500, huh? Right on.
It's a joke that I tell these days. If you think you have an idea that's so good no one's ever thought of it before, it's probably a terrible idea.
Yeah, right.
Probably a right, reason
right.
No one's ever done this before. But 624 was the version that actually is shelf-stable, and that version is essentially the version that we bottle today.
Jackie, did you kind of, just I'm very curious about this, did you sort of land at a certain point through the process, like, here's the flavor profile or damn near it that I want, so I'm going to keep, now what I'm going to do is make it shelf-stable? You know what I'm saying? Like, did you kind of get it to where you wanted flavor-wise, and you're going to work at it until it's shelf-stable, or was that kind of a constant dance back and forth?
It was a question of three things. The first thing was making sure we had the balance of flavor right. Mm-hmm. The second thing was making sure that it was actually shelf-stable. And the third thing was the alcohol content. Mm-hmm. I actually tested versions of this at every half proof from 10% to 30%. It landed on 15% alcohol or 30 proof, specifically because that is the point where you cannot taste alcohol, but you know it's there.
Right.
Any more than that, you can taste the alcohol. Any less than that, it kind of doesn't even count.
So Jack, so like for listeners out there, if you want to equate that to something that like vermouth, right? That would be right about that level of alcohol.
Yeah, it's about the strength of a fortified wine.
Yep. Okay. Sorry, go on, please.
Oh, the other great thing about 15% alcohol is less taxes.
Yeah, there you go.
Because that is one thing the government does not play with. You make alcohol, they're going to find you and tax you.
Yes, they are. And then they tax you on the level of alcohol, as you noted.
Yep. Absolutely.
Well, so awesome. So you finally got it right at 624. And then what? Because that was hard part A. Then there's hard part B.
Getting the shelf-stable formula was the easy part. The other part is I had no money.
There's hard part B, man.
And the process of acquiring a DSP is prohibitive to entry. If you don't have $1 million lying around, you're probably not going to get a DSP.
Yep.
The requirements are federal, state, and city. It's a 10-year background check, and everywhere you've worked, everywhere you've lived, every dime you've made, if you have any convictions against you legally, you're automatically disqualified. They want you to list the serial numbers of your equipment on your application.
Right.
They want you to list...
So meaning you have to have your equipment up front.
Not just you have to have your equipment up front, but they want you to list the lease of the building where your equipment will be sitting for...
Right.
However long you're waiting for your license to come through.
Right.
So they want you paying rent on the empty space, holding the equipment that's not being used while you're waiting for the process to be approved.
Right. Deliberate barrier, like we're talking about. Yep.
It is very capital intensive. True story. I will never forget 6 months after I left corporate America, getting a call from a friend of mine who's a VP at Hearst. He said to me, listen, don't tell anybody, but we're buying another media company. There's going to be layoffs. There's going to be overlap, but I want my people running my magazines. Come back, he says. Come back, work for me, mid six figures, 32nd floor, corner office overlooking Central Park. Brian, in my heart, I know I'm going to tell him no. But I took the meeting because he's a friend of mine. We get there. We get to this burger joint on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. We're having a bite to eat. I reach into my bag, I pull out a bottle of Swirl I've made in my kitchen, because at this point, I don't have labels, I don't have my DSP, I don't have a facility, I've got nothing but my big ideas and a business card.
And a funnel, right?
And a funnel. what I'm going to do, and the guy at the table next to us stands up and says, so are you looking for investors?
Oh, I didn't know this part of the story. Oh, wow.
Yes. So I stand up, I shake his hand, I reach into my bag. I pull out a second bottle because I know be prepared. I give him my business card and I say, take this home. Enjoy it with your family. If you're still interested in investing after you've tried it, we'll talk later in the week. I swear, Brian, I didn't even look at his card. The next morning, I'm rifling through my wallet and I'm staring at this business card trying to figure out why the name Alexander Bernstein is so familiar. It's Leonard Bernstein's son who runs the Bernstein Foundation.
Ah, okay. Gotcha.
He became the first person to sign a check.
Ah, I didn't know that part. That's awesome. So that was your initial investor. Okay.
Yes.
So, and let's do this, Jackie, actually, since we're a little pause here, let's take a break on the show. We're going to come back and we're going to continue talking about your journey to create, not only create Sorrel Liqueur, but actually bring it back to life. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. Come on back.
Hey, everybody, Roger here with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Be sure to check out Nitty Grits Podcasts, a growing network of shows about food, drink, and culture. Visit southernfood.org for more.
Every afternoon when I wake up, I say a little prayer and drink up, and thanks the Lord for driving me home once more. There's an open Bible on the table and an empty bottle on the floor. Last night I thought I died and went to Whiskey Hill.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening to the NOLA Drink Show. Friends, happy to have you here. Yeah, you know that. Sipping on a wonderful Sorrel hot toddy, trying to kick my cold here a little bit, but more importantly and much, much better, I'm talking to my friend Jackie Summers, Jack from Brooklyn, creator of the Sorrel Liqueur. Jackie, you were on the show with me the last time. I mean, you've been on a few times as we've talked about, but I think the last time was really early on into COVID, and I was still trying to figure, we were all trying to figure out what the hell was going on. And I kind of did things a little differently that for a little while there, because we did this over the phone, I think, as opposed to Zoom, because Zoom wasn't even our friend yet, which seems like hard to even imagine these days. But we did it over the phone, and you were on for a segment, so I'm really glad to have you back on, man, and see your smiling face.
It is always good to see you, man, and I can't wait to get back to NOLA.
Yeah, man, you're gonna stick around as much time as we have to in the podcast only segment, another shot with NOLA drinks, and we'll talk a little bit about that then, because I'll get to see you again in July, and I'm looking forward to that, my friend. But let's continue. Yeah, man. So let's continue the story about Sorrel. So you got an initial investor. So that's hard part A, formula. Hard part B, initial investor, then hard part C, right? I'm speculating.
Hard part C was I didn't have any contacts or any experience in the liquor industry. It was literally me going door to door with restaurants and shops and bars, going, hi, I'm your neighbor. I make this. Would you like some?
Now, did you have your equipment in a space at this point, or did you kind of start getting out just showing this as like a sample beforehand, mm-hmm. just to give people get a taste in their mouth?
We launched in May of 2012 at the now defunct Manhattan Cocktail Classic. The response was overwhelmingly positive. One of the interesting points I remember from that is they'd given patrons at the classic NFC wristbands. Oh. So people, if people enjoyed something that they drank, they could tap a box on your table to let you know how many times people had stopped by your table to have this drink. And I had a 6-foot table in the basement with a little black cloth. And I mean, the big brands came out, and there's trapeze artists and there's dancers and there's burlesque and there's all of this show. And I was the only person in the entire building serving 1-ounce pours.
Well, because everybody else was doing like little tiny pours, quarter ounce pours.
Everyone was doing fancy cocktails.
Oh, fancy cocktails. Okay, I gotcha.
I served 9 cases of 1-ounce pours.
Jeez.
When the numbers came back, people had consumed more Sorrel than anything else in the building that night. That's how we knew we had a hit on our hands. That's how I knew.
That's awesome.
But the interesting part, again, was I was going out into the market trying to sell this beverage, and nobody believed I was the owner. The response I got most often was deliveries in the back, because no one had seen a black liquor brand owner before.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Constantly. I'm assuming constantly, left and right, everywhere.
It's been interesting in that the world is changing slowly and reluctantly. So there aren't the same battles to fight as far as that goes in 2022, like there were 10 years ago. But still bringing a beverage to market and investing in the education it takes to really get people to understand what this is and how to consume it has been the biggest challenge. There's It's a beverage with centuries of history. And the first question people ask is, what do I do with it? Because traditionally when people think of a liqueur, they think of something that is syrupy and thick that you cannot drink.
Right.
And Sorel is the opposite of that in that it is meant to be consumed straight. You can drink it over ice. You can drink it as you are in a toddy. You can mix it in place of a vermouth in your favorite stirred cocktails. But unlike most liqueurs, you don't have to just, it can be more than a component. It can actually be just something that you open up a bottle and drink like you drink, like you drink a bottle of wine.
Mm-hmm. And like you mentioned, it's low ABV. So put it over ice or even drink it warm, as we're talking about.
My favorite thing in the summertime is just a little bit of seltzer and lime. Good to go.
Just make a little spritz out of it. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, Jackie, I mean, so you were talking just a second ago about, you know, when people would come in and think you're the delivery guy and not the company owner. And I think I don't want to jump too far ahead in the story, but I want to make sure we get this part in the radio portion of the show. So you created this fabulous product. The feedback was excellent. So you got that part going. That's hard part C. Now there's hard part D, right? Because then you still faced an uphill battle and you had to cease production for a while.
Well, the interesting thing about getting your product, great reception in the market. Do you know Karen Hoskin from Montoya Rum?
I don't believe so. I know of, yeah, but I don't know her. Yeah.
Wonderful, wonderful human. But she will tell you that the problem with success is you see yourself start to run out of money.
Yes, right.
And if you do not find a better way to finance what you're doing than actual sales, you will hit a dry point. In 2015, I signed a multi-million-dollar contract to take the brand national that reneged.
Oh, I didn't know that part either. Okay.
Yo, so
was this like a contract, private equity kind of firm thing or something like that? Or was it?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. Gotcha. Okay.
Signed the second contract in 2016, who also reneged. So took a pause to really investigate who the best type of partner for this is. And to, again, reinvest my time in community. And the community work, I really feel, is still the most important thing that I get to do. It's a people industry. And it's always going to be people industry. It's always going to be people first. And if we can figure out how to make it better for people, then it's a better world for all of us. In the process of doing that work, I met Fawn Weaver, who was in the middle of launching, as we know, Uncle Nearest, which just became this runaway phenomenal success. Our paths intertwined on several occasions because of educational work. And when it came time to ask for advice with the investment group I was dealing with at the time, Fawn immediately saw the value in what I was trying to do and took over the conversation, and it's been just a fantastic ride with her and the Uncle Nearest team.
So, Jackie, tell us a little bit about what Fawn did, right? They started essentially a fund, correct, to support Black-owned spirits entrepreneurs.
So one of the things that Fawn can do like she breathes is raise money. she raised $50 million to create a separate fund to help businesses that had the stuff grow. And by the stuff, I mean great juice, a solid team, and an authentic story. The other interesting thing about the way Fawn moves through the world is the very first question she asked me, Brian, is she said, are you looking to build it or to flip it? And I looked at her and I said, the only thing better than building a brand that they offer you $100 million for is building a brand they can't afford.
Right.
Which is what she's doing.
Right. Absolutely. And we've
seen it happen in our lifetime. So you can entirely choose a different route than the nine-figure exit. And I don't want to sound disingenuous, and I don't want to sound ungrateful for the opportunities to do these things. I am fully aware that I get to do things that my parents and my grandparents and my great-grandparents would never have had the chance to do. But I feel I owe it to them to create legacy here.
Jackie, so one, and let's do this, actually. Let's take a break because I'm going to ask you a question because I think you just raised a really important point that I want to touch on. So, friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. We're chatting with Jackie Summers, Jack from Brooklyn, creator of Sorrel Liqueur. Come on back.
Get in the groove and let the good times roll. We're going to stay here to soothe our soul. It takes all that long.
Hi, Brian Diaz, host of the NOLA Drink Show here. Check out Nitty Grits Podcasts, a growing network of food, drink, and culture shows. Visit southernfood.org for more. Welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here. Thanks for listening in. You're chatting with Jackie Summers, Jack from Brooklyn, about Sorrel Liqueur. And Jackie, when we took the break, you were talking about, you know, creating opportunity. I remember one of the times that you were on the show before, we kind of, I mentioned this, that we based some of the shows off seminars that you were putting on at Tales of the Cocktail. And one of them was Build Your Own Table, which sounds like this is like what Fawn did with Uncle Nearest and essentially what you've done with Sorrel Liqueur. Is that accurate?
One of the interesting parts about the difference between creating a longer table and building your own table is the longer table might not have your interests at heart.
Right.
And I'm someone who taught for years and still strongly believe in the necessity for longer tables so more people have access. But if a table does not have your same basic desires at the core, you need your own table. One of the interesting things about talking to all the VCs over the past few years is everybody wants in and out in 5 years. And my plan is more than 5 years long. If the people who are funding you really are only looking to get in and get out, you need to know how to say no.
Right.
And you need to know how to go, this is not serving me. I need to figure out how I can align myself with the people whose interests, whose goals, whose values are similar to my own.
And that's hard, right, Jackie? Because, I mean, sometimes somebody's waving a check in front of your face and you've been struggling to get that check for a while. So to walk away, that's difficult.
It is incredibly difficult. And one of the best lessons that you learn from Fawn Weaver, the power of no. I will never forget meeting with the head of a large liquor company whose name I won't mention, who took interest in Sorrel in 2014 and told me that they loved the brand and they'd get back to me in a week or so with the answer. And second meeting, they told me that the brand is fantastic. The juice is great. The packaging's great. It's going to do great, but it wasn't for them. And the owner of the company said to me, someone will come along and offer you $50 million for it. And my response to him was, the number's too small. If you give me a choice, and I have a choice at this point in my life of whether or not I want to be acquired or be an acquirer, I choose the latter. I choose the latter because I'm the beneficiary of generation upon generation upon generation of people who sacrifice for the opportunity to create legacy. Here it is right in front of me.
That's really well said.
Uncle Nearest is entirely about making sure that the story of a man who taught Jack Daniels how to make whiskey becomes a story that's known to every American, to everyone around the world. That is a noble cause. Sorrel liqueur has been around for centuries. The not Sorrel liqueur, but the drink that it's based on, it's been around forever. How can I do anything less of a service to all of the people who've ever done this than to make it stand on its own?
Really awesome. It's amazing. It's such an important point. And your passion behind what you do, Jackie, has always struck me. And how you honor the legacy, how you honor your ancestors, how you honor the tradition. And then now I think, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but how you honor the assistance that was provided you from Fawn Weaver and Uncle Nearest. I mean, that becomes part of this tapestry, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Someone asked me recently, because my work schedule is insane, and I am in my 50s, and I keep a harder routine than most people half my age. And someone said to me, you know, you have peers who are getting ready to retire. How do you stay hungry? And my answer is always the same. I'm eating for the ancestors who starved.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Good one, Jackie. Do me a favor, because we have about, I want to leave that part there and let that resonate with people. We have about 5 minutes left before we have to close out the portion of the radio show. So okay. Let's talk a little bit about today, because you're now on a journey to get Sorrel back into the market. And so talk about, you know, being hungry and being in your 50s. You're back on airplanes, man, and you're hustling it and you're getting it out there.
Listen, the reception of Sorrel has been fantastic. Everywhere we go, it's being embraced. At the moment, we're in 8 states, about to be 10 states. We're probably in 20 states before the year is over. My food scientist is amazing. At some point, I must introduce you to Dr. Hobie Wedler.
Cool, yeah.
PhD chemist, master sommelier, born blind.
Interesting. Okay.
Brilliant human, but basically took our production to tenfold.
Is he in New York with you, or where is he?
He's located? Based in Sonoma.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
It's in Sonoma. But yes, the markets have been fantastic. I'm looking forward to being in Atlanta in a couple of weeks. I'm looking forward to being back in Chicago. I'm looking forward to Las Vegas. I'm looking forward to San Diego. Everywhere we go, I'm looking forward to Charleston. Everywhere we go, this has been so well received. There's no upper limit to this. And the best part is there's no demographic for this. This isn't a question of men or women, young or old, black, white, Asian. Everyone we run into loves this stuff. And it mixes with literally every product on the market. Vodka, gin, mezcal, tequila, rum, whiskey, bourbon, rye. You can make any kind of cocktails with this. So I'm looking forward to, again, being on the road and helping the awareness of the brand grow and trying to let people understand why this thing survived for so long. Mm-hmm. Sorrel is a story of joy and perseverance in a bottle. And it is one that it's delicious, but the story and the narrative matters. And everyone who tastes it becomes part of the story. And for me, that's beautiful.
I love what you say. You have a really, as I told you before, a really snazzy box that the bottle now comes in. And thank you, by the way, for sending me one, because we can't quite get it here in Louisiana, but that's changing in June. Can I say that? I can say
yes.
That, right? Okay.
Yes.
And I didn't want to have to bleep that out. Jackie, you know I'm lazy and I don't like to edit. So, so yeah, that and that's what you say at the end of the box, is you have this really powerful statement, a message from you. And then you say, you know, anybody basically who, you know, now you're part of the narrative.
It is a beautiful thing. There's been a toast in my family for generations. My mother gave it to me. Her mother gave it to her. I do not know how far back it goes. It's call and response. One person says, may you live forever. And the other one says, may you never die. And Brian, I gave this toast for almost my whole life and didn't understand what it meant, because everyone dies. No one lives forever. And then I started on this project, and I understand now, it's not about how long you inhabit your physical body. It's about living a life that people will tell stories about for generations. I am here to be the custodian of this story and to make sure it moves on after me and continues along after me. I'll be a footnote and that's fine. The story is bigger than me.
Right.
The story is so much bigger than me, and everyone who participates contributes to the story, and I'm grateful for that. I'm so grateful for the opportunity.
Awesome. Jackie, thank you. Let's do this. Tell people, we're going to close out the portion of the radio show here in just a second. Tell people where they can find Sorrel online, find you on Instagram, find the website, be on the lookout of where they can find it in their local market if it's there or if it's coming.
So it's SorrelOfficial.com for the website and SorrelOfficial on Instagram. We will be in NOLA very, very soon. I will definitely see you at Tales in July. And if you can't wait till then, you can find us on reservebar.com.
Awesome. Perfect. Jackie's going to stick around, friends, for another shot with NOLA Drinks, where we're going to continue the conversation, probably talk a little bit about some industry stuff and maybe a little bit of a deeper dive in Sorrel. And then I got to get this guy going because he's an important man. He's got somewhere to be, and I probably should go lay down. Would probably not be a bad idea. But friends, if you are listening on the radio, I do encourage you to go to NOLADrinks.com. The podcast is there. It's the only place you can get our extended podcast conversation, another shot with NOLA Drinks. But if you are a radio listener, I do appreciate it. And remember to be kind to one another. Use your turn signal. And until next time, cheers, y'all. Stick around for another shot with NOLA Drinks, friends. Happy to have you here. We got a few more minutes with Jackie. We're going to bounce right back over to that conversation. Here we go. All right, it'll be up another shot with NOLA Drinks. Thanks for sticking around, friends. We are chatting with my friend Jackie Summers. Jackie, are you up in New York right now? Looks like you're at home because you got the kitty there.
I'm in Brooklyn, New York. Yes, sir.
Are you in the same pad that you were in before, or are you in a new pad?
I'm in the same place I was before, but I got to tell you, I'm actually really ready to start to own my own place. Given what New York rents are, it doesn't make sense to rent anymore. So looking forward to that this year.
That's exciting. I think the last couple times you've been on with me when you were in Brooklyn, they were probably nice days or something, because I think you were outside, maybe on a deck or something. And that's why I didn't recognize the background. Okay, cool.
Not quite as nice out there today.
Yeah, what's going on up there these days?
It's winter hanging on.
Okay. Hopefully by the time people hear this, Jackie, winter will be over. We're here in New Orleans, right? We're in our usual, schizophrenic approach to weather. It's humid and fairly warm out, but I think it's going to be 32 degrees again or something like that over the weekend. So,
what?
Oh, dude, we get about 15, 20 days of true spring, but they're non-contiguous. So you got to take them when you can get them.
I understand.
Yeah. And then when you're down here for Tales, it's summer. So, and that's
and a half.
Summer and a half, man. August, it's a little bit before August, because you always go, man, it's July, and you're going, can this get any worse? And then you go, oh, wait, it's not August yet. There's another gear. There's one more gear behind
it. Let's make it worse. Turn the heat up and increase the humidity to 100%.
Exactly. And you know what, man? Even up in New York, you know this, when the humidity is 95%, it doesn't matter what the temperature is. It's irrelevant.
Nope. Very true.
So, Jackie, let me ask you this question. And we're going to talk about some industry stuff maybe if we have a few minutes. But we talked about your journey with Sorrel previously in the previous segments and how you had to, you know, do a reboot and the whole story with Fawn Weaver and Uncle Nearest. Uncle Nearest had wild success. I know that I'm sure it was a grind for Fawn at the very beginning. I don't know the inside story of that. But when you now finding newfound success, what do you think has changed? And I know that's a very large open-ended question, but is it timing? Is there a different landscape, different resources, all of the above? What's different this time than the first time?
I think a lot of things have changed, but I think the needle moves because we move it.
Yeah.
I have been writing about discrimination and marginalized communities for the last 10 years. But 10 years ago, this was not something that companies were looking to have as part of their policy. I was the outlier and it was disruptive. 10 years ago, you didn't have women-led companies, especially black women-led companies, that the liquor industry thought could succeed on their own. Fawn Weaver destroyed that narrative. Mm-hmm. She's a black woman. Her team is entirely women-led and they're absolutely killing it. So the idea that either women or people of color couldn't run and start their own companies, that's now changed. The idea that we can't actually make spaces accessible to the disabled, that is changing. The idea that there should be different levels of access to funding for people who are trying to start businesses, all of these conversations are things that we didn't talk about right 10 years ago. So part of the landscape has changed, but really, truthfully, it's changed because we change it. And thank you. Thank you for always being... I'm sorry for the noise.
That's all right. You're in New York, man. I'm in New Orleans. It's a familiar sound.
Thank you for always being a part of the conversation of change.
Oh, Jackie, anytime. Thank you for your kind words. And I want to thank you because every time, as I mentioned, our mutual friend Chris Cabrera was on the show with me recently. And every time they're on my show, I learn something. And every time you're on my show, I learn something. So
love Chris.
We both love Chris. And I thank you, my friend, because you've taught me so much over the years. I want to encourage listeners, go to our website, noladrinks.com, and just put in the search bar, put in Jackie Summers, and go catch some of those shows that we've taped before, because we've had terrific conversations with Yannick Benjamin has been on with us, Samara used to be Davis, now Rivers was on with us, right, and all kinds of cool stuff. And we've had a lot of conversations that take, you know, things have changed, obviously, even in that amount of time, but taking deeper dives into some of these topics that we're talking about here. So,
yes.
And I extracted a promise from you, Jackie, because we're I know you got to run in a few minutes here, so that you got to come back on. And I do this on the air so that you can't get out of it. So that you got to come on the show with me again, man, when you're down here.
Have my word.
So tell me a little bit about, like, with Sorrel, man, when you're traveling around and you're doing the do, you're still a small team though, right? You started out with just a small number of people and it's still a small team, isn't it?
We are small, but mighty.
Small and mighty.
Summer Lee is my vice president. Would not do without her. She is, I the joke I always tell is she does everything I do, but backwards and in heels. She's as smart as I am, but she was smart enough not to open up her own company.
Yeah, there you go. It gives it that little advantage, right? So she's with you, and where are you guys doing? Where's production taking place now these days?
Oh, great question. Laird's is my co-packer now. So the great thing about Laird's is they have 300 years of distilling experience. They're literally America's oldest legal distiller. They made Applejack for George Washington. So it's a beautiful thing because they took a 500-year-old recipe. They're America's first distiller, working with America's first legal black distiller. And the product is better than it's ever been just because they're much better at distilling than I ever was.
I'd like to say, go ahead, finish what you're going to say, then I'll tell you what I'm going to tell you.
And they share our values.
Okay.
They understand legacy.
That's really important. Amazing. And actually, I'd like to say that I was precognizant of this before. That's what's in my hot toddy, because I made it kind of traditional. So I've got Laird's Applejack going on with the Sorrel and the honey and the lemon. So I feel smart, man, all of a sudden.
Lisa Laird is one of the best in the industry, and I adore her. But it is really a terrific marriage where our interests are aligned and we get to do things, great things together. I'm so happy to have Laird as our co-producer.
That's awesome. And that gives you a capacity to scale, right? And all that good stuff.
Yes.
So what's kind of, what's next before we let you scoot out of here, man, what's next on the horizon for Sorrel? Just reestablishing some of the previous markets and getting into new ones.
We're going to make Sorrel ubiquitous. That is absolutely part of the plan. But, you know, just between us girls, Brian, Sorrel was always meant to be tip of the spear. It is based on a beverage that sat in the Caribbean for 500 years. I'm the first person to bottle it. My feeling is that there are other flavors out there like this waiting for somebody to, quote unquote, discover them, figure out how to make it shelf-stable, and put it in a bottle. So I'm never going to do a vodka, gin, rum, tequila, mezcal, whiskey. God bless the folks who are and who are doing it well. There are other flavors out there that I plan to introduce under the Jack from Brooklyn umbrella that have the same historical value, that are culturally significant, and that are flavors that are, to the most part, unknown to the American palate. That's my life goal, and that's what I'm looking forward to doing.
That's really exciting, Jackie, and I look forward to that. And please keep us posted on all that. I'm going to be seeing you in July, which I'm really looking forward to, and you're down here for Tales. Do me a favor, one more time, tell people where they can find you online and all that good stuff.
SorrelOfficial.com and on Instagram, SorrelOfficial.
Awesome. Very good. And always follow Jackie on Instagram. It's always a good follow. And he'll make you feel bad for your physical fitness regimen, by the way, too. I had to stop looking at some of those, man, during COVID, because he made me feel bad, man. But
we all have COVID pounds. I got them too.
Yeah. Jackie, when I started, I said, you know, when COVID first started, I said a cocktail a day until COVID goes away. I realized very quickly, not sustainable.
Yeah. Here we are 2 years later.
Yep. thanks, my friend.
Good to see you.
It's really good to see you too, my friend. And I'll be in touch. We're going to close things out here. And I'll be back after a brief musical interlude, and then I'll close things out. Thanks, friends. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for joining me this time around on the NOLA Drink Show. Happy to have had you here, friends. Yeah, you know that. I mentioned a couple of our upcoming shows, the next two that are in line for you, coming down the pike out there, chatting with our friends from French Quarter Festival, our annual French Quarter Fest preview, 39th annual French Quarter Festival. I don't think I said that at the top of the show. Really, you know, my favorite music festival. I always say that, blah, blah, blah. But I mean it. It's actually very, very true. It's just lovely. And I'm so excited. I was saying to my wife the other evening, I'm like, I'm so excited this is coming back after I taped the interview, and just so excited to be there and take it all in. And then also I mentioned author Sue Strachan, who wrote the book on the Cafe Brulo cocktail. That's coming. I was talking about Bourbon Fest at the top of the show, so go check that out, NewOrleansBourbonFestival.com, coming up next week, starting on Wednesday the 23rd. We'll be bringing you some programming out of that, too. It just sort of remains to be seen who we're going to corral, who we're going to horse collar and get on the show to join us. Probably going to tape a bunch of shorter segments because everybody's pretty busy. But we'll see how all the, you know, how all the cards lay down, how all the chips fall there. And we'll see who we get. And we'll put probably one or two shows together. That's kind of my plan out of that event. So that's going to be fun. We're also going to be chatting with Bart Watson, chief economist for the Brewers Association, pretty soon. And we've got a bunch of other good programming lined up for you, too. Coming after Bourbon Fest and after these next couple shows, we won't even miss a beat. So there you go, friends. Thanks again for listening to the NOLA Drink Show. Always happy to have you around, friends. Remember, you know, take care of each other out there. That's right. Here's to you.